Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and no, you're recording with a half-working pair of headphones. And with me, I have...
Why do I feel the urge to play a sudden slap bass groove? I wonder.
And...
So they finally go into space. So what else are they going to do now?
Wait, is the space thing not what they're doing for F9?
I mean, there's Ludacris and Tyrese Gibson in a rocket ship thing.
Already? Because, like, I know they kept saying they wanted to end this series at, like, 10 movies, but, like, I always thought the 10th movie would be space.
I think they're going for 11 now, or I think it's... I think they're going for 11 movies now, because I don't know. They should keep making money.
I don't even care. These movies just keep getting dumber and dumber, and I love it. It's like the perfect snack food. It's totally unhealthy, but it just fills the craving.
Like, I'm just sitting here thinking that, okay, if space is number 9... then number 10 is basically going to look like the automotive equivalent of friggin' Gurren Lagann or some shit. Just imagine a mech fused out of cars. It may not be as cool as Megas XLR, but, you know.
That maybe, just maybe, The Rock will do it first to stick it to Vin Diesel one more time.
Well, and Tyrese too. You took a shit too?
Oh, yeah.
Believe in the Dominic Toretto that believes in you.
It's family.
My family is John Cena, oh, wait. The family that will pierce the heavens. Anyway, here we are. Episode 217. So, how's everyone's week's been going?
Well, besides my jubilation that we're going to see, Dominic Toretto's evil brother, played by John Cena. It's so stupid. I love it. It's so dumb, but I love it. Besides that, very busy week, as per usual. And, yeah, that's pretty much all I've been doing, just working, because people be messy. And did I do anything else this week? I don't think so. I live a very dull life. All I do is just work and do stuff on here. Next month, though, I'll probably get a little bit more time to myself, which I desperately need because I've earned it after dealing with this shit for over a year. But I'll touch on that when it comes up next month.
Yeah. You know, it's a year of this stuff. And, me trying to cope, especially considering that they delayed MCR to 2022. Why?
Yeah.
One thing I was looking forward to this year, when this bullshit would hopefully be over. I gotta wait another year. Sad. But okay. Anyway, Mark, what about you?
Well, as usual, me just been working because that's all people want me to. That was scheduled to do was either come to work every. Almost every day. I mean, it's a good thing. It's a good thing I had a day off yesterday, which I needed because, I just need a day. Like, yeah, I was like, my shit is dull. All I do is work and stay home. Even though, fucking, I might want that more than nowadays. It's because everybody wants to say, yo, I need to do this thing for me. I need to do this shit. Yeah, I gotta do everybody a fucking favor now.
Mm. Yeah. We live very dull lives, but that means we live very responsible lives.
Yeah. Well, we're responsible because nobody else wants to do it.
I mean, y'all may live responsible lives, but...
Sorry. Of course, I checked out a few episodes of new season of Affinity Train, season 4.
So far, shit, that's out already?
Yep.
Yep, they're already.
Damn.
Yet another casualty of the Big Blue Death Star, because...
Yeah. Because somebody been cheating it for some fucking reason. You
already know. Two hands don't know what the other one wants.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm hoping by tomorrow or this week I get my copy of The Woman Called Physical Mine on Blu-ray because I thought about it earlier. It did not. I hope coming in tomorrow. It could be one. Yeah, I ordered a long time ago. I'm just waiting for it right now.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I need to get my hands on that myself. Maybe when I get paid this weekend. Anyway, as for me, a bunch of personal stuff I won't get into, but as I opined earlier in the opening of this podcast, my headphones are now half dead. The Ooh. Left ear hears nothing. Even when I do that push it in from the outside, I can only hear something for like a split second before it fades into the ether.
Yeah, sounds like a dead driver.
Yeah,
not so much you can do except. Do you still have limited warranty coverage on that?
I think the warranty coverage was like, I think it was only for like 1 or 2 years, and I've had these for about 3.
Oh, then you're gonna have to go to Best Buy or somewhere and just get a pair just to do what you need to do for a while before you get a next that set also, of dailies.
Yeah, and that's a time for your earphone funeral. I get the shovel.
I'll get the bagpipes.
I'll get the coffin dance.
But yeah, I am of course having to work with half a working pair of headphones for this recording, but it is what it is. And speaking of it is what it is, I'm not sure how that counts as a segue. We are going to jump into our usual business by about this point. As always, we start with a new song discussion for the past week. There will be a playlist down in the description, so you can follow along with us and pick up a handful of new tunes to either jam or discard. Your choice. Starting right up here at the top, it's been about 4 years or so since the last, the comeback album from the 90s band Quicksand in 2017 with Interiors. And, you know, that's about time that the group would be working on new material, which there have been reports of them doing. You know, signified by the fact that we actually got a new song from them this past week. I don't know if this is like a holdover, because I think they said that this month is when they were going to the studio. So if they banged out a song this quickly, holy shit. But, you know, there's no way to say for sure. But yeah, we have a new track here from the band called Inversion. And yeah, it sounds very, very like modern, mid to late 90s kind of post-hardcore. You know, it's got a nice groove at a steady pace, some pretty straightforward chord progressions, more or less vibing on that for the first half, although the songs just have a brief shoegaze bridge. The drums hold things down pretty tightly, and they have a pretty good tone to them, emphasized by some of the great fill work, you know, closer towards the back half. It's steady, reliable, to the point. I dig it.
Yeah, it's a heavier kind of shoegaze. It has some very strong groove work to it, and I think the wording used is squatter punk.
What? That is very strange phrasing. I can neither confirm nor deny that.
Like, I'm just pulling this from the Stereo Gum piece. It says, squatter punk. Going something involving English Neil Nausea vibe. From, like, it's like Manhattan punk or something. I'm not entirely sure what it is, but whatever it is, I like it. And the production sounds especially clean here. It's very full. It has a very full, rich sound to it. Very good.
All right. Moving on to the next track here. Oh, hey, look, it's a singer that Mark listened to one time with a name that's very hard to pronounce.
Rina Sawayama, it's not that hard.
I remember him struggling last time.
Okay.
I struggled too. Like, it took me some getting used to. You're not alone.
Yeah, it is struggle. But now, I thought it's a rework of a song she released last year on Armor last year, which I did listen to, which I did like. And this time it's featuring a special guest, Mr. Elton John.
All right, let's pause to take a quick count here. So, we've had Stephen Wilson, Ozzy Osbourne, mm-hmm. Gorillaz,
yep.
Lady Gaga. Uh-huh. Apparently he's done something with Metallica recently. So that's like five going on at least six different guest appearances we've heard from this man in the past year and a half or so.
I mean, the guy's living his fullest life, as you know, while he still can. And it's better to be an Elton John than to be, like, Morrissey.
Oh.
Yeah, on the bright side, yeah. At least JPEG Mafia has never written a song about Elton John. Let's hope it stays that way.
Yeah. Nobody cares, Morrissey. Fuck off.
Yeah. And you bet... Amen. The Simpsons do you like that? It's like, oh wow, Simpsons did something that might make us laugh for the past few years. Okay, anyway, for this song, yes, you work. It's over a song for the album is "Chosen Family," which is "Chosen Family," which is on vocals in there, and by that song, the song's process, you know, is quite simple. It's how like. How your family could be anybody who's well, you know, not into they you're gonna be related to relate basically that type of shit, like you know the whole like you and me were fit there. I just thought about Fast and Furious again. Ain't that a bitch? Anyway, I can tell. Anyway, this song gets very heartfelt. Like I can tell. Like when I heard from her last album, which is going into what you know, because I never really she is bisexual and she and you know, coming to know the different people of creed. You know what I'm getting at? Like getting like you know, your family could be you know anybody who can relate to you, who can you know. Who fuck with you, who, you know, do that shit. Yeah, it's all that. Because I was difficult, like, yeah, and it was just vocal, like, it's still good, like, I mean, you still got on John and his vocals to it, which again, has a very heartfelt, you know, thing to it. I liked it.
Alright, moving on to the next track here. We're about a couple weeks away from Gojira coming back with their latest album, Fortitude, at the end of the month. And we have the third release single from the album, Into the Storm. You know, coming in about the right time you'd expect. And, you know, that right cymbal pattern that you hear in the drum, you know, in the intro part with the drums and everything, it kind of has the exact same tone and rhythm of, like, I don't know where it's coming from, but, like, when you hit a railroad crossing and the barriers go down and the train's coming by, I don't know if that's the train itself or just, like, you know, the alarms reminding you, hey, dumbass, slow the fuck down, or unless you want to get run over by a train. You know, that kind of sound. But after that, we get, you know, some nice chuggy-chug grooves in the verses. The chorus is admittedly a little bit basic by Gojira standards. The bridge itself sounds pretty great. Again, heading back to, like, a reiteration of, like, that intro sequence with kind of more wispy tremolo leads. But the song does have a couple of awkward tempo transitions here and there. It's kind of my least favorite of the singles, but I think I have a relatively solid idea of what to expect from the album going into it now.
Mm-hmm. Quoting Nick Nocturnal from the YouTube comments, that drumming should be illegal, because right off the bat, we're starting with some fast polyrhythms on the drums from Mario Duplantier, and that's tripping me hard, because I can't find the downbeat in that section. I don't know where it starts and where it ends. It's just, frantic syncopation. And that's just how it goes until that main chugging riff comes in, and then the chorus just ends up sounding more melodic than I would have guessed with its chord structure. Then the wild drum patterns return back in the bridge section, and again, I'm lost. I did notice the weird tempo shift coming out of the bridge. That might have been just like a comp to take, just put in there. That could have been reworked a little bit, but weird timing issues aside, pretty good track here. I dig it. The galloping riff with the double bass section reminds me a little bit of L'Offensive Lint Sauvage, along with that more lo-fi outro section just sort of fades out. It has that same production technique to it where the EQ just sounds very AM radio-ish, best way I can put it.
Yeah, I can hear that. But, speaking of pretty major releases towards the literal end of the month, yeah, Don Richard, new album Second Line, that's coming out April 30th as well. Gonna be a bit of a busy weekend there. And it's about time we're expecting another song, I think, or pair of songs, rather. It's a little bit confusing. I think someone at Stereogum needs to check how they format articles, because I may have accidentally jotted the name of this new single, or singles here, as Mornin' Eye Streetlights, but apparently it's actually just Mornin' Streetlights, and the eye is like that, you know, vertical barrier thing on the keyboard. You know when you like shift backslash that, you know what I mean? But whatever, this isn't a fucking typography podcast. This is music podcast, damn it. Anyway, tell us what's going on with the new song, Mark.
Okay, let's go to the first one, Morning, which is with this muscle or left like as in I know the one of them all, and that is your father. Which will say that they do it's more the slower use of light instruments and a lot of production from her, which is something about her, you know, also love that her parents have, like, you know, which okay, it's fine. It's a very fine slow song to start off with, which all right, it goes so well. When it gets the streetlights, however, it's more experimental to me. Sort of shit that she's known for, like I think according to this according to Stereogum piece, it's basically all of it. Like it says, it's the structure. Fuck that rules. Fuck that. Like it's type of like that type of shit. Like which I'm thinking more of the second. I'll say as a whole, it's good. I will say the second half streetlights, that's more where I was vibing to that. It's rotation of that, and it's kind of, I'm thinking the more production than that. It's kind of like they've got a good creative feel to it, at least most of it a couple of times. But yeah, this is all good.
Yep, two pretty solid jams here, and now to move on to the next track here. From our everyone's resident favorite rapper with a barely Googleable name that's not search engine friendly, Mike! Just Mike. All caps.
Oh Mike. Okay. So anyway, coming July 21st. July 21st, we are able to NK. It is another album with the titles Disco.
With an exclamation point. You know, it's like if Panic at the Disco moved theirs. God, could you imagine that name with two exclamation points? That would be weird.
And apparently, around 1 year after his last album, with the World, which I put on my honorable mentions in that one time. Okay, so anyway, he got a new single out, which is called Evil Eye, and. And everything, like, wow, this is some very soul, very soulful, wild shit. Like, I'm kind of like, that's it's really fucking amazing here. I will say with Mike, it's definitely more that lyrical word salad that I kind of do or don't get what he's saying, but then it's like, fuck it, I'm enjoying what I'm hearing from him. And it's not too long either. It's just like what? It's what, like 2 minutes and 13 seconds. It's like, all right. But this song got some good vibes going for it. That was like from Mike for a while. It's weird. At least, well, sort of weird. But it does have a lot of good vibes going for it. But yeah, can't wait for this album. It is some sounds that are just gonna spiral, just had a name for like disco or that type of shit. I don't know.
We shall see. But moving on to the next track here. So we might have just about unfortunately missed getting around to this last week because, you know, our recording schedules right about the tipping point of the usual monthly check-in on Danny Elfman. But now it's time to do our monthly check-in on Danny Elfman, and this is a pretty significant one because not only did he drop the expected monthly song, but as I'm sure most people were probably correctly predicting, he has in fact announced his first official proper solo album in 37 years.
Damn. Yep.
The madman, the fruits of all of this quarantine craziness will presumably come to fruition when Danny Elfman drops the album Big Mess on June 11th. Very appropriate title. So, yeah, we have the latest monthly single from the madman called True. And, yeah, this seems like, well, it's very anxious sounding, but not in the typical way that we've heard from, like, the previous single, for example. Like, you get a lot of buzzy, synthetic, industrialized drums, you know, punctuating the mix. Elfman, you know, moaning and droning over top the instrumentation with the occasional violin stab to help punctuate the rhythms, as opposed to the super frantic, you know, shreddy finger violin madness. There's this middle solo guitar section with that twangy, discordant guitar lead, you know, stumbling his way through the song about as janky as you could expect with this. Lyrics that are appropriately enough, you know, about feeling like very psychologically adrift as the world around you just kind of doesn't make all that much sense. It is, as expected, very strange, but a strangeness that I am intrigued by. And I will, in fact, have to be there to hear the album because this could either be too strange to, like, make a year-end best of list, or it very well could be the strangest thing that makes my year-end best of list. There's no in-between. I have to hear this at this point.
I'm not even sure what else we can say about this guy. He's channeling all of our existential dread into art, and there's something poetic about that, while also being incredibly horrifying and terrifying.
Yes, abso-frickin-lutely.
Also, by next month, we have his last single will be next month, if I'm correct, if that's going to happen.
Presumably?
Well, yeah, we'll just have to see how that plays out. But, you know, I just realized, apparently, of his listed, you know, collaborators on this album, apparently one of the credited guitarists is Neely Broche, who we have talked about a few times, given her contributions to the various 2 minutes to late night bedroom covers, including Now That's What I Call a Metal 90s Club Mix, still the best song of 2021. So, yeah, it's gonna be fun. But now to dive into something that's a little bit more headache-inducing, depending on your perspective.
Oh, boy.
So, it's been about 5 years or so since we last heard a full-length studio album from the guys in Fear Factory with Genexus, and they've recently announced that they are coming back with a new album June 18th called Aggressive Continuum, but, okay,
I have some details here, by the way.
Yeah, because there's not really a way to discuss this without acknowledging the elephants in the room, and I'm not really sure how much to go into, but we're gonna try and, like, you know, be as concise as we can with this. Technically speaking, if you want to go all the way back, the seeds of everything kind of started around 2010 or so during the Mechanized album cycle when Burton C. Bell and Dino Casares basically formed a new version of Fear Factory, minus founding bassist Christian Old Wolbers and drummer Raymond Herrera, instead swapping them out for Brian Stroud and Gene Hoagland, respectively. One problem, the other two guys were technically still in the band, because of contractual obligations. Yeah, there's a lot that can be dove into, but basically, while Casares and Bell did want a classic reunion, the other two guys did not want to be in a band with Casares. Even though, by all legal contractual definitions, they were still technically operating as, quote, Fear Factory Incorporated, which, okay, I'm admittingly a bit fuzzy on how, like, lineups work in regards to, like, band contracts, but I guess that means they, if they wanted to release music as Fear Factory, it had to be a version of Fear Factory that specifically had these four members.
Lineups are a very tricky thing. Ask Queensryche about that.
Oh my god, Queensryche.
Because remember, there's Queensryche, and then there's Jeff Tate and his backing band. And neither of them are Queensryche.
Yeah, there's that. There's, if you're really into, like, you know, more underground extreme metal, the bullshit going on with both versions of Batushka. And most recently, what was going on with the split from Children of Bodom to Bodom After Midnight. It's crazy business. And then let's flash forward to the next album, The Industrialist, which prior to the album cycle and recording of that album, Brian Stroud left the band, being quoted as saying, "Life's too short to spend it with people who don't respect you." Presumably after that, he went to the bar and shared a drink with Jason Newsted. And then Gene Hoagland actually left as well shortly after the album came out, because he had to find out about the completion of the album recording online after it came out, because apparently he was barred from actually recording any drums for it. I think they just used, like, a drum machine, you know, drum programming, like they do for some of their material. And okay, I think
That blows my mind, because Gene Hoagland is, like, the nicest guy in the world. And you're gonna do that to him? Come on.
Yeah, pretty much, like, everything I ever read, the guy says, like, he's not just a great musician, but also, like, a chill dude to, like, just be cool and hang around. What the fuck did he ever do to you? It's like, you know, and also it's worth noting, I forget how long ago this was, but I had this urge to listen to this one particular song off The Industrialist, so when I went to go, like, search it on Spotify, the album as a whole was not there. And then sometime later, I forget, it might have been a month or two afterwards, I checked and it went back on Spotify. So I'm guessing there must have been more legal stuff there. So, okay, so Industrialist happens. Then we move forward to the Genexus album cycle. I think that album came out 2015, 2016, yeah. And there were tons of stories following, like, in the aftermath and before of it. There was, like, a lot of dramatic back and forth about the actual status of the band. Most of this coming from now deleted social media posts by current and former members, indicating that supposedly Fear Factory was, like, broken up and not happening. Which is strange, because despite everything, and by everything, you'll see what we mean, apparently Wolbers was still at least a little bit interested in reuniting with the band at some point. Yeah, and by everything we mean, this was in spite of a lawsuit that was, I don't know how far back it strained, like, when it initially filed, but there was, like, legal shit going on around this album cycle, and even well into the years, like, before, well, now. And those legal troubles, you know, that lawsuit basically prevented the aforementioned, it prevented the new guys from releasing music under the Fear Factory name. It's really complicated, like, there are available legal proceedings and dissections of it. I tried to read, like, Metal Sucks' attempt at breaking things down, which even their attempt to, like, dissect things was, like, we're leaving out a lot of stuff, but I'm pretty sure there was, like, you know, bankruptcy filings, and I think Burton or Dino had to pay out, like, almost $1 million to the other guys in addition to various other legal expenses. So, yeah, all this legal chaos, all this social media drama about the band breaking up, which is a bit strange considering that in November 2018, at the inaugural edition of the Headbangers Con, Burton C. Bell had told Jose Mangin of SiriusXM that the band had already prepped a new album called Monolith. You know, apparently it was already, like, worked on pretty much to the point where they could, like, submit it to the label and slate it for a 2019 release. But then about a year after that, Dino Casares himself said that there was no new Fear Factory album happening. So, a whole lot of he said bullshit. And, the quickest way that we can say this all resolved itself, legally speaking, because again, there's tons of red tape and bullshit to sort through, but the long and short of it is all the legal drama eventually resolved with Casares owning the full legal rights to the Fear Factory band name, and I guess any of their music as well. Now cut to September 2020, when Casares launched a GoFundMe campaign to assist with unexpected new production costs of the upcoming new Fear Factory album. 2 weeks afterwards, just about on the 28th of that September, Burton C. Bell announces that he is officially leaving Fear Factory in a statement that features, among other things, the following quote: "I cannot align myself with someone who I do not trust nor respect." Shit, apparently Casares didn't find out about this whole split until it went public on social media. That is about the shortest way we could phrase this. There's more that could be dove into. I mean, I don't know if Alex wants to run over any details I missed. Because like I said, there's a lot.
Well, I think you got the most of the TLDR stuff on here. But I do want to mention, this album is coming out in June. And it does have Burton C. Bell in there as vocalist. All of his tracks were recorded back in 2017.
Yeah, that's its own presumed legal can of worms. Especially because, you know, it's the 19th that we're recording this, and this album comes out in 2 months. That's plenty of time for, I mean, assuming he has money to even file a lawsuit to prevent this album from coming out with his vocals on it.
I think the plan is that, I don't know if it's from the camp of Dino Cazares or Burton C. Bell, but I think there is a plan to be more cordial with the promotion of the album. I think, Cazares said that he's hoping that both he and Bell can work together to support the album, because I would assume by now the album is finished. It's been in the works for 4 friggin' years. But apparently in the next couple of days, a new vocalist of Fear Factory is going to be announced by Dino Cazares.
Yeah.
So, make of that what you will.
Yeah, that's going to be that's definitely going to affect things, like the, you know, upcoming touring cycle, whenever the hell that happens. So, yeah, with all that drama out of the way, we have a new Fear Factory single from their upcoming album release, Aggressive Continuum. It's apparently not being called Monolith. Go figure. The single is called Disruptor, and I mean, if we're looking at it divorced from the drama and everything, I mean, it sounds like solid enough Fear Factory. You know, much of the song beat, as you would expect, being driven by a lot of grooving tempos with a lot of super chunky, mechanical sounding guitar riffs and drums. I do dig the particular syncopations of the kick and guitars in the, you know, main verses. The chorus, of course, have those added layers of mechanized synths and that kind of airy, clean vocal style from, you know, the one who left to counteract the heaviness and everything. I can talk tonight. The bridge hits pretty hard with those aggressive tremolos, and there's a decently satisfying outro slowing things down a bit, especially given the, ironically enough, the drums helping things along with some pretty decent fills to help brighten things up beyond just being pure, you know, mechanical, you know. So, looking at it on its own, it's alright, it's solid. If you've heard any Fear Factory before, if you've liked any Fear Factory before, you're probably gonna like this, but I don't know, knowing everything that was going on in the 10 years before this, and even just the 4 or 5 years in the intervening, you know, prep of this album, just makes this whole thing feel really, like, scummy, you know? Because legal bullshit, and everyone just kind of seems like a bunch of whiny brats and all this.
Yeah, pretty much, that's pretty much Fear Factory in a nutshell. It's just been a wild mess for a long time, and yeah. As for the track, it's, well, it's Fear Factory. It's industrial metal with fast drums, low tunes, chucking guitar riffs, harsh vocals right in your face. But everything sounds overall very dry. There's not a lot of flourish in the mix. I don't know if that's an Andy Snap production thing, but it's definitely more of the same for their style, I guess we can say. God, this fucking band, I swear. At least the video has a group of folks in a mid-2000s sedan fighting the Nomax from the Astonishing in a bloody gunfight, so that's fun.
Yep. Oh my god, this is gonna be so, something. But, speaking of album sagas that are technically 10 or so years in the making. So, who here remembers Liz Phair? I personally don't know for sure. Like, if I ever heard any Liz Phair back in the day, I wasn't cognizant of it.
Well, the answer to that question is really threefold. You're going to get people saying, oh yeah, Exile to Guyville, that was a great album. Then you're going to have people saying, oh, that fucking self-titled album with the Matrix produced again, that was horrible. And then there's everybody who saw the Train Records video of Fun Style, and then suddenly everybody's having, like, Apocalypse Now war flashbacks.
Like I said, that video was pretty much the first time I ever knew anything about Liz Phair in any capacity.
Same here.
Penis Colada.
Oh, God.
But that's pretty much where everyone assumed the Liz Phair story ended. Again, as far as my understanding of the story, as it were. But apparently there's been some renewed interest with that, you know, renewed Rolling Stone 500 all-time albums list, throwing Exile and Guyville way up there, the aforementioned Train Records video, and, you know, long gestating rumors of a potential new album from Liz Phair, which is apparently actually going to finally be happening this year, as she has scheduled June 4th as the release date for her first new album in 11 years, Sober-ish. So,
oh boy.
We've had, apparently there's already been a couple songs released at some time in the intervening years, but this is the first single released with a, you know, album announcement to go along with it. So here we go. My first technical proper taste of Liz Phair outside of the context of a YouTube video called Spanish Doors, which... Yeah, truth be told, I couldn't tell you a damn thing about her music, so I don't know where this fits in context of anything, but from what I'm gathering, this sounds like, you know, kind of adult alternative-ish. The verses being a little bit moody in some of their vocal melodies and having these, like, synthetic buzzy accentuations in the guitars and even a bit of the percussion, with the chorus, relatively speaking, being much more melodically bright, although the lyrical subject matter is, you know, about the dissolution of a relationship, possibly a marriage, and the kind of, like, broader fallout that entails from it. It's all right. Again, without proper first-hand context for Liz Phair's music, I'm the wrong person to be asking about any of this, but I wouldn't necessarily say no to listening to this album, you know, based off what the song is presenting.
Okay. Well, the good news is that this is 100 times better than the colossal misstep that was Fun Style, and the better news is that this sounds pretty good on its own merit, and that's a great sign. It's got some 90s alternative tropes blending in with a more contemporary pop sound. It's not bad. I dare say it's not bad. And if anything, it's a gigantic step up from where we were a decade ago, which is nothing but good.
So, would this be... Okay, I think we have to speak of it. You know how last year we got Fiona Apple with Fresh the Bolt Cutters? Would this be another one of those,
Kind of.
Like an old rock artist making a long-awaited album since the last... Well, in Liz Phair's case, 11 years. Whereas Fiona Apple might be, what, 20? I'm guessing. But, yeah. That's what I'm kind of getting from that, considering, well... Having listened to the Train Records episode, I'm thinking, well, who knows? Well, Yeah, there.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, people prop up Exile in Guyville big time, probably due to when it came out, June 1993, and just how, I guess, unique it sounded in comparison to everything else that was coming out around the same time. But, yeah, when you pair up with The Matrix to try and make yourself sound like Avril Lavigne, in a pop realm where Avril Lavigne's shelf life was already shrinking, like by 2005, that style was completely gone from the mainstream pop scene. Yeah, that was not a very good choice. So, back to basics. Just go back to basics. You can't go wrong when you go back to basics.
I'll have to do some Liz Phair prep in the next couple months. I'll be sure to schedule that on the docket. But yeah, with all that out of the way, that takes care of the new song discussion. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have a bit of news here, so stay tuned. And we're back. We got two news topics to discuss here, one of which just kind of creeped up on us yesterday and today. So, you might remember that one of the many, many casualties of last year's, you know, everything was the fine folks at Danny Warmer Presents being unable to do their big five festival, 10 sets from Metallica. Very upsetting for a lot of people, I'm sure. But it seems like they're trying to bounce back a little bit this year. I think they already got, yeah, they should already have Metallica rebooked for a couple of festivals. Maybe not as grandiose as their original plans, but it's still happening. And breaking this morning, we apparently have some more surprises. So, Alex, care to tell us what's going on in the realm of this particular festival producer?
Well, it appears that one Danny Warmer decided to ask everybody a question. Are you feeling happy now? Does it make you happy? Are you feeling happy? Are you fucking happy? He got Mudvayne to do some reunion shows for four of his festivals. Yes, the Berber Dang Meme Band is coming back for Incarceration, Aftershock, Louder Than Life, and Welcome to Rockville. And I bet you Shannon Guns is beside herself happy about this.
Now all rise for the national anthem.
The power of memes sometimes does good.
It never gets old. As a wiser person than I once said, Mudvayne wrote Slipknot songs with Seinfeld bass lines. And we as a society just let this happen. God, the fucking memories.
That's what happens when you hire a jazz bassist to play in your metal band.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah, Ryan Martini. He's he was a jazz bassist.
And he chose to dress and make himself up like that.
Just for the video and that very brief touring cycle.
God, that was such a strange, strange period. Especially because Dig isn't even the best Mudvayne song. Like, I realize that's probably splitting hairs because, you know, it's Mudvayne. But honestly, I always thought Determined was a way better song than Dig, but I guess Determined didn't have any meme-worthy bass licks. So it shall be from now until the end of time. The last thing anyone will hear when the world ends is just ominously off in the distance. Berber dang.
God bless.
Yeah, so that's gonna be exceptionally fun. You know, not the least of which was because the tease was so obvious. Like, their big social media post was like, stay tuned for news from us tomorrow. We think you will dig it. Sell harder, guys. But yeah, so there's your big thing for that particular festival producer, and have fun with that, people. No word yet if that means a new album. God, could you imagine new fucking Mudvayne in like 2022 or 2023?
Well, we can never really say never nowadays. Crazier things have happened.
Yeah, crazier things. Like a famous metal musician raiding the United States Capitol. Mm. Yeah, we're checking back in on this asshole. Because there's been some all-important developments in the case of Mr. John Schaefer of Iced Earth, a.k.a. a gigantic fucking chode who can eat shit. You know, besides all of the, being quickly identified, you know, on the run, eventually caught, and apparently being dropped and disowned by anyone he's ever played in a band with, including his label, but they haven't said anything because I assume they're trying to save face. He's been begging and pleading at every conceivable angle to presumably get his ass off the hook, if that's even a possible thing. You know, apparently his attorneys filed a motion in early March to dismiss all charges leveled against him, claiming a violation of the Speedy Trial Act. Last week, he agreed to temporarily forego the rights afforded to him by that act so he could extend his detention until May 3rd, because apparently his legal defense team needed more time to prepare their case. And by case preparation, I assume all they have so far is, okay, look, I know he was photographed deliberately entering the United States Capitol and presumably spraying someone with bear spray, but you gotta understand there's more of a context here. You see, hey, look over there, runs. That's pretty much about the most you could expect from someone agreeing to defend this asshole. And, yeah, so now, we're at a point where he has, in fact, pled guilty, specifically to two of the six charges, you know, levied against him in the raid. The full list of charges, as you will remember, are knowingly entering or remaining in any restricted building or grounds without lawful authority, disrupting the orderly conduct of government business, knowingly engaging in an act of physical violence against any person or property in any restricted building or grounds, violent entry and disorderly conduct in a Capitol building, engage in an act of physical violence in a Capitol building, and parade, demonstrate, or picket inside of a Capitol building. So, yeah, he is specifically, you know, pleading guilty to obstruction of proceedings and entering the restricted building with a dangerous or deadly weapon. Because, again, the goddamn spray. This, collectively, between the two charges, could add up to about potentially 30 years of jail time, which, you know, God, please let it be the maximum.
And this is getting off easy. Two out of six charges.
Yeah. Only two. I'm amazed they somehow managed to squeeze that and not, you know, get him for all he's worth. Or have they? Because apparently, he's apparently going to snitch. Yeah, so he's entered into a plea bargain with said prosecutors that sees him cooperating with, you know, the relevant authorities by sharing information about various other conspirators in exchange for a lessened sentence. And remember, as far as said conspirators, they include, you know, not just the other people there, but presumably participants of the far-right militia group, the Oath Keepers, who were, you know, involved planning the invasion of the building. And apparently this would be the first time that any serious charges have been, you know, levied against this group in particular, even if the Oath Keepers, you know, well, the Indiana chapter specifically claimed that, oh, Schaefer isn't one of them, which, you know, sure, Jan.
Okay, I have two things to note. One, this would make him the Tekashi 6ix9ine of the metal community.
Ouch. And true, two, but ouch.
Two, funny you mentioned this group, because just this past Sunday on 60 Minutes on CBS, there was a piece about this group. And I believe the wording was that one such individual said that they regularly get assistance from cops. Not police officers, cops. There's a difference. Police officers know what they're doing. Cops are like that asshole in Minnesota. Or yes. Rather, those assholes in Minnesota, plural.
Yes, yes, those bastards. ACAB exists for a reason. But, So there's an additional piece here, you know, being cited by Metal Sus, because The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell on their April 17th broadcast. Did I say podcast or broadcast? Broadcast. Damn it. A former federal prosecutor, Glenn Kirshner, spoke with host Jonathan Capehart on the MSNBC program, explaining a bit about the potential significance of Schaefer, you know, snitching to the federal government. Yeah, it's pretty consequential, as he says, because a guilty plea with cooperation, you know, that means they were probably, you know, investigating this group for a while, and they're going to pretty much squeeze him for, like, every drop of information that they can get out of him. Like, they're probably going to try and wring it proportionally, like, as lessened of a sentence as they can get in exchange for as much information about these freaking militia groups and, you know, capital rioters as possible. Not to mention, this could take down two organizations because, surprise, surprise, there's a lot of coordination between the Oath Keepers and Gavin McInnes and his bitches. Goddamn Proud Boys, fucking bastards.
The more I hear that name, the more I can't believe this guy lost his fucking mind after trying to get into actual, you know, media production. He was one of the founders of Vice, and he did that terrible pilot for Adult Swim that we will not mention. And somewhere along the way, he lost his mind and just started doing this shit.
Yeah, but you can imagine, like, again, as the aforementioned lawyer speculates, this will probably have some sort of domino effect if we're considering the sort of spiderweb network of far-right groups and militias active in the United States. More people presumably coming under charge and then trying to, you know, fucking snitch for plea deals. I sincerely hope that's the case. Like, you know, we've seen a lot of assholes involved in this somehow getting off easy in, you know, various certain respects. But, God, I hope this actually amounts to something in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, this... We all knew this was going to take a long time because there's a lot of people to get to and a lot of information to sift through. Which, if you can believe it, there were actually people in Washington on that side of the aisle who don't want to investigate all the stuff that happened. I wonder why.
No, we totally weren't pulling the strings. Just that don't look at the curtain over there. We need to complain about cancel culture more.
like I said, if he is going to go to this length to, you know, try and get off easier and, you know, blab about who did what and who did where, then, yeah, he's going to become the Tekashi 6ix9ine of the metal scene, and everyone's going to want him dead. But, you know, he can die in prison, so, you know, win-win.
Fingers crossed.
And if anything else, throughout this whole ordeal, we have learned, don't be like this guy. Be a wholesome guy, like a kind of guy who would go to Target, buy plush toys, and spend his time playing World of Warcraft. Like this one upstanding citizen, George Corpse Grinder Fisher.
Yeah, imagine getting chewed out by arguably the most well-known frontman in all of death metal. Like, that dude just chills, minds his own business, collects Final Fantasy figures. And then there's you.
Yep. He is a fantastic fellow. And just as a little addendum, I'm just going to bring up somebody who actually has had a run-in with the U.S. government once upon a time, but in a much more different circumstance, Dee Snider. Some of you might remember that once upon a time, there was a big hoo-ha regarding this whole demonic, devilish, heavy metal music. And Dee Snider was one of the many who was brought in to basically defend metal music, along with Rob Halford and Frank Zappa, because You know, that was actual discussions of artistic censorship going on back in the 80s. Not like nowadays with you fucking whiny-ass white people blabbing on with fucking Bill Maher of all people.
Oh my God, Bill Maher.
Ozzy, get your life in order, Jesus.
Oh no.
But anyway, Dee Snider did not mince words in regards to this guy. Quoting him directly, "This piece of shit is an embarrassment to the metal community. First he shames us with his terrorist attacks on in DC, and then he becomes a rat to his own people for a lighter sentence. Man the fuck up. Own your shit. If you do the crime, do the time."
You know, I realize if you sprinkle the word jabroni in there a couple times, it's kind of indistinguishable from an Iron Sheik takedown.
Yeah.
Talk about things I wish would happen in real life. That would be amazing.
Yeah. Oh, and just scrolling through here, apparently in a report from the New York Times, John Schaefer might be able to get Witness Protection Program sponsorship under these conditions. He must submit to court supervision in Indiana, surrender his passport and international traveling documents, stay out of Washington outside of court hearings and attorney meetings, and will be permitted to travel within the U.S. with notice to pretrial services, so, you know, legal proceedings, and, most importantly, cannot possess any firearms or explosive devices, even legally. Firearms must be removed from his home. And to think, all you had to do was just stay home. But no, you wanted to be a man for a fucking baby.
Yeah.
And you basically get nothing.
You killed your own career, and now you're going to die alone and penniless. I hope it was worth it.
Yeah, I would say you lost everybody else's respect, but who respected you again?
You'd be surprised. There's a lot of people who still believe in the whole art versus artist mantra, which I've never liked that whole thing. It's a gigantic cop-out fallacy, and y'all can quote me on that. I don't like it. Never have, never will.
But, anyway, John Schaefer, eat shit. And we will see you, hopefully, never again, because you'll be off somewhere where we never have to think about you, because you fucked around and found out. But,
just in the corner with 6ix9ine.
Yeah, pretty much. But with the news now out of the way, we can move on to the last little bit of business here, which is the new album releases for the week of April 23rd, 2021. Starting right at the top here, we have the only EP we'll ever be getting from Bodom After Midnight with Paint the Sky with Blood. We have a new album from Dinosaur Jr. with Sweeping Into Space. We have a new project from rapper Moneybagg Yo with A Gangsta's Pain. We have the sophomore album from singer Rag and Bone Man with Life by Misadventure. And last but certainly not least, the much anticipated new album from Porter Robinson with Nurture. Now it is time to clean house and get the hell out of here. So Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
As always, Aura of Azure, where I will constantly remind everybody that bullying Jim Ryan works. Now let's bully him to the point where we can get the C-bomb issue patched out.
Mark, what about you?
Again, on Twitter at Matt of the Media, where I see stuff and on off it. And of course, the mind I have it at WordPress.com. Some shit might be posted there this week. Just looking for that. Hopefully, yeah.
And as for me, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, etc. at Rob Barracuda. Email me robert@sororesolution.com for, you know, questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Video usually goes up by the weekend, so check the official YouTube channel, subscribe, hit the bell tab, so you're notified whenever new stuff goes up there. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @SororeZo. Like us on Facebook. Be sure to visit the website sororesolution.com for written articles, this podcast, podcast O&A, and all of that good stuff. Be sure to jump into our official Discord for, you know, more talk of how we can bully Jim Ryan for reasons. And, of course, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Well, that'll about do it for this week. We'll, of course, be back next week with more of the, usual business. So, until then, since when the hell did McDonald's start having a sweet chili sauce? Or a Cajun sauce, for that matter.
I don't know if I want to try it.
Thanks, BTS.